Mickey Hart here, you're listening to the GAA Hour Football Show.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
Alright, you're very welcome along to the GAA Hour Football Show, sportsjoe.ie's brand new dedicated Gaelic football podcast brought to you by AIB. Our team of studio pundits for the championship includes Paul Galvin, Barry Call and Senan Connell. There'll be other people dropping in as well, and they'll be joined by Sports Joe heavyweights Mikey Stafford, Conan Doherty and myself, your host, Colin Parkinson. So Barry and Conan are with me in the studio today, and Mickey Quinn will be joining us later in the show after Longford's sensational win in Clonus. Welcome, lads.
Good to be here.
Barry, I've been searching the internet all over knowing that you'd be coming in here today, and I'm looking for some sort of credit for your career, and I can't find anything. There is nothing online with you thanking me for
really?
The huge influence I had over your career in Maynooth.
You may go onto the Wikipedia page and edit it then, because I know
it's a good idea.
You've been trying to take a bit of credit for Alan's career and Rory Kavanagh, Alan Dillon, Mark O'Shea.
Yeah,
it's a thorough list, but I left out myself to it.
I'm actually putting words in your mouth, and it's still not getting any. Conan, just to give you a bit of information, 5 All Stars on the team in Maynooth we had. Obviously, cats are here. Barry, we had Alan Dillon, Alan Brogan, Mark O'Shea and John Keane all on the same team. They're only under-21s. Didn't realise at the time how good they were going to be. Rory Kavanagh was there. Ross Munley was there. Who else was there? Dermot Geraghty from Mayo.
A couple of other really good club guys.
Declan
Graham
Lally.
Nor and Declan Lally, you know, as well. So we had a really good mix. I think we were just a bit naive, a bit young. You know, a lot of the top teams around at that time were probably at an average age of 23, 24, whereas we were all like 19, 19 and a half, you know.
Except for me, I was about 27.
I'm sure there are plenty of colleges that will bring that same group of lads back into play.
No, this was the most talented bunch. This was the most talented bunch. But look, basically, I nurtured 5 All-Stars to the roster, and I'm just leaving it at that. We'll move on from there. What we actually do want to talk about at the top of the show is, you know, the biggest controversy from the weekend, and that's the Aidan O'Shea, you know, dive. Which a lot of people are calling it. Before we start talking about it, let's have a listen to what Sean Quigley thought of it after the game.
In my opinion, a very harsh penalty. You know, being honest, they probably could have had a penalty a couple of minutes before that, but it wasn't. I think Joe kind of is covering himself by giving that penalty, but come here, that's football, that's life. Unfortunately, we're out of the championship. As I say, a very big call from Joe McQuillan went against us, and I don't think it was. Honestly, I didn't have a clear view of the penalty, but it looked very harsh for a big man like Aidan O'Shea to go down like that, you know.
Conan, so you were at the game. In real time, what was the reaction like up there?
In real time, the interview, it was the kids roaring Aidan O'Shea's name in the background.
Classic, yeah. just to rub salt in the wounds.
Yeah, per Sean Quigley trying to talk about it, and these kids are, like, loving him. Like, he actually got a standing ovation as well after the game, which, I suppose, as a neutral, I thought was a bit, I don't want to say sick, but it was just, come on. But real time, yeah, definitely. Soft is a very soft word for it. It looked like he went down. Like he wasn't tripped. He wasn't, he barely pulled. Like, the man had a hand on his, Shea Cullen had a hand on his back. But as Seamus, or Sean Quigley says, they put a man like that down. I don't think so. It was very quiet in the press box. There was a lot of Mayo people. I'm wondering, you know, did they sort of have this realisation as well that he did take a fall? But there wasn't a lot of talk about it in the press box at the time, but you could definitely see what had happened.
Yeah, it's a difficult one for people because Aidan O'Shea is a very likeable player, and you know, he's a player that wears his heart in his sleeve. So to see him doing that, it's almost like let's get over the shock of him doing it before we start, you know, even commented on it.
Yeah, maybe that played into, you know, John McQuillan's eyes as well. But yeah, I mean, look, it's very disappointing to see from Aidan's perspective. I think he was probably hoping that there would be a bit more contact from the Fermanagh fullback, or maybe expecting it.
You think he had his mind made up when he was running for the ball?
Well, possibly. Kevin McLaughlin was out the pitch and saw obviously Aidan making the run, and it was a good diagonal ball.
Beautiful ball.
Maybe slightly overhit. I don't know if Aidan was going to get to it before I run over the end line. So we saw an opportunity. But yeah, he was probably just thinking that the fullback might actually catch me a bit more than he did, and mightn't look as that obvious, but you know, clearly it was a dive, and I'm sure he wasn't overly pleased with his actions come when he woke up Sunday morning.
I'm going to make a case for the defence of Aidan O'Shea here. There was, okay, I don't want to get into an argument like the match of the day, Gary Lineker. There was contact, so you have to go down. Aidan O'Shea gets very, very rough treatment.
I agree.
Constantly throughout a game. When Aidan O'Shea goes in full forward, he's manhandled. He's held, he's pulled, he's dragged. You know, so he doesn't get a lot of frees. So when he does feel a little bit of contact on him, should he accentuate the contact to make sure he gets that free, or should he just take that contact and maybe slightly put him off the ball?
I think you just got to take that contact. You know, if everyone had that sort of opinion, you know, throughout the pitch, I think you just see a lot of guys, you know, falling to the ground and, you know, waving their arms, looking for frees, that type of thing. So, I mean, there's no doubt a few of the bigger guys, the likes of, you know, your Kieran Donaghy, your Sean Kavanagh, maybe Owen O'Gara with Dublin and Aidan O'Shea, you do get a fair bit of treatment, you know. But
is this the big men fighting back?
Well,
it's a very,
diving back.
Possibly so, but like, they are going to be targeted, and a lot of teams would try and maybe double team or triple team them. And I think if Aidan O'Shea or these big guys win a ball, it's up to them to try and actually bring in their teammates into play, because obviously there's a couple of guys then that are available on the outside. So there's a ways of turning around to be a positive and actually, you know, benefiting the team as well.
Conan, two things on this as well. Mayo were going to win the game one way or another. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, they'd storm back into the game. They were only a point down. There was 8 minutes to go. They had a gale force wind. Aidan O'Shea had a one-on-one situation, potentially. Didn't really need to dive.
I don't think he had a one-on-one situation. I think he was going to get the ball, and he was going to get it far away from goals, out wide. He was going to have three or four men around him again, like he had the whole afternoon. And I agree that Joe McQuillan definitely... It didn't contribute directly to Aidan O'Shea doing what he did, but I mean, there's an argument here. Are big men treated worse because they're big men?
Oh, they are. No, I don't think that's even an argument.
But I'm in no way going to condone what he did. Like, he dived. Like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you think. Was there an opportunity there? He dived. He cheated. So, like, where does it stop? If he's a big man and he's getting wrongly treated, I mean, where do we fellas come into it then? Do they start pumping themselves with steroids because they're getting wrongly treated as well, and they're not getting the same rub of the green? It's cheating.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you that. Okay, where does it stop is a good one, because cheating has been going on in the GA for a long time now. And I'll tell you, from my career, and these are cheating techniques that are completely accepted and allowed in the GA. Going down on the ball, you feel a hand on your back, you throw yourself down on top of the ball. Yeah. That's going on a long
Guaranteed
time.
Guaranteed free.
Guaranteed free.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got, you're a forward, you're on, you know, referees have copped on to this one. You grab your man's arm, you both fall to the ground. That's cheating. I've often played full forward where I'm running out with my man, and before the ball, I get to the ball, I'll stop and he'll run into the back of me. Again, free. Mm.
Or a pull of the jersey that allows him the momentum to get ahead of him.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, this kind of uproar about this dive, like, there's cheating been accepted and being put down as kind of clever play for a long time.
So cuteness.
Yeah. So was Aidan O'Shea cute or is he a cheat?
I think there's a big difference between cheating and cynicism. And like, in the case that you're mentioning, they're pulling the guy's arm, you're at least still giving the guy who's being victimised a chance to maybe get out of it. He's still going to get a free off it. But when you're actually cheating, when you're diving, when Shay Cullen has no part in it at all.
There was contact, though.
Come on. Come on.
In slow-mo.
This is match of the day here. There was contact. Yeah. And that's it.
But when you're giving the fullback no chance at all, he's just taking a dive. Shay Cullen's going out after the ball. He doesn't know what's happened. And you're just going straight to the referee and conning him. I mean, I think there's a big difference there. What you're saying, maybe you should put it under the black card category because it's cynical. Definitely is.
Yeah.
But there's cheating and there's cynicism.
I think it's such a big talking point because, one, it's Aidan O'Shea, who's such a high profile player. And then I think just the actual situation that was in, you know, for Man O' War still leading the game, and there was only maybe 4 or 5 minutes left on it. It was a knock.
Was it 64th minute?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then also, you know, Fermanagh, probably a lot of people, the neutrals were shouting for them being underdogs, and the fact that it was a knockout game and that your season was over. So,
and it was on bloody telly.
And it was on TV as well. So plenty of this possibly happens in lots of the other qualifier games that aren't televised, and they don't get that attention, you know.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. First game we want to have a look at here was the Connacht final. I was up at that. How any game is held in Pierce Park, I just will never know any high-profile game. Galway is already a city that has serious bottleneck issues with traffic. Yeah. It has serious problems. And then to throw a huge high profile game there, it took me like an hour and a half. I left the house at 9 and got there at 1, you know, and it takes 2 hours from Portlaoise. So it's like 2 hours, then you're parking in a car park. Mm. And you're way back down the queue, so getting out was...
And it wasn't a good game.
It wasn't a good game. At the end, the weather conditions were poor. But after the game, I spoke to the two Kevins, Kevin Walsh and Kevin MacStace. Have a listen.
Kevin, what's your thoughts on that? You kind of must be kicking yourself, considering, you know, you're 2 points up with a strong wind, 4 or 5 minutes left.
Yeah, looking, that's, you know, you'd like to finish it out. We had one or two chances, but it just didn't happen to go in the day, so... That can happen, you know, but, you know, if you roll back the clock after a certain amount of minutes, Roscommon got a goal that we probably wouldn't have been happy with, and we found ourselves 4 or 5 points down, so we came in level this morning, we're going home level tonight, and, you know, there's certain parts of the game that you'd like to say you've done better, but there's other parts where there was great determination shown by a group of lads that really want this, so that's important as well.
I think over the 70 minutes, just looking on from my own opinion, is that you probably shaded it, you know, and you were the better team, but, you know, a draw at the end of the day is what you get out of it.
Yeah, but oftentimes better teams have got beaten, so sometimes it doesn't go for you, you know. But look at, as I said, it's half time. It's half time now in this encounter. So where the match is going to be, I'm not so sure. But look, it's back to the boys getting back. We'll try and learn a bit from his management as well out there. And it's a good experience for those boys to get those type of games. Roscommon would have been Division One right through, and you know, we had been with Mayo the week before or 2 or 3 weeks ago. That's a Division 1 side, so there's great experience with these lads, so they're signed up to fairly well.
Where are you at with the development of this team? You know, you're in your second year and you've got a defensive system which kind of wouldn't have been the way you know the Galway teams you would have played on played. Where do you think this Galway team is at now?
We're still in the learning process. You know, there's a lot of young fellas, I suppose, even go back to last January. There's 5 or 6 fellas there that hadn't even started for Galway come last Christmas. So there's a lot of learning there as well for those guys, even getting into the group that's there last year. So it's hard to know exactly where you are. The only thing you know is if you can go out and compete with Division 1 sides, it's a good sign that we're getting close to somewhere. So,
yeah.
You know, maybe before this... you know, you'd wonder if systems are good or whether they're good or bad, but sometimes that system might look a bit more of a system than it actually was because there was weather conditions. I'd say attacking from the back. If the forwards didn't follow the back, he gets chewed by the management, so he's no choice but to go back, and all of a sudden, before you know it, you're 13 behind the ball unintentionally. So yeah. that happens in those
weather attacking conditions. Corner backs in the game now as well.
Yeah,
you have to be
fast. Yeah, well, it's the way it is, and switch and play and all that kind of stuff. So there's always someone coming off the shoulder, so that can happen, particularly when there's a few turnovers, it's a counter attack again. So where are we at? You know, we're going to keep improving as much as we can.
Yeah, you decided to concede the kickouts to Roscommon, they were just tapping it to the two corner backs. And letting them build up from there. You know, a lot of teams now are pushing up and not giving that handy kick out or that kick out. Is that something you talked about before the game?
Yeah, so it happens, and sometimes you actually don't want it to happen, but you just can't reset quick enough because of how everyone else has gone up at 90 miles an hour and you end up with a certain amount of bodies behind the ball. So when you're coming or taking the kick outs as quick as they were, sometimes you just can't get up there in time. So that's what happened a lot of times today. You be switching and chopping at different times, so... that can happen. So
yeah,
Roscommon were pushing on all day, and so were we when we had the ball. So sometimes you're just out of shape. So
yeah,
that's not always intentional, but we'll do it sometimes.
Yeah, you probably have a stronger midfield, so Roscommon going along with forcing them to go to midfield would probably suit you a little bit better.
Hard to know. I mean, today is a really, really wet day. I mean, so many balls, you know, there was plenty of balls on the ground we could have got and didn't get. You know, they came off breaking ball as well. So you know, this kind of a day is really, really hard to handle. So look, we'll take the draw and move on.
Yeah, I said Kevin MacStay outside just finally. It looked to me, just looking on, there was like two kind of teams, a little bit afraid out there. You know, afraid to fully go for it. You know, which is understandable. You know, Mayo have dominated the province for so long that maybe players out there going, you know, have a really good chance of winning the Connacht final here, and maybe, you know, not expressing themselves as they usually would.
Yeah, that can happen. Look at the economy. It's a huge prize out there, you know. And I suppose these two sets of players find themselves somewhere they probably hadn't been for a while.
Yeah.
And maybe at times, you know, there were certain times where maybe our boys would have maybe working so hard to get back and to try and cover the runners. Sometimes maybe slightly forgetting to come out the extra 5 or 10 yards. So
yeah,
that can happen as well. But look, that's something we'll be assessing ourselves and see can we improve on that.
Kevin, you're relieved to get out of here with a draw, I'd imagine.
Well done. I'm not going to say sense of relief. Honest to God, a few lads asked me that, a few of the journalists. We hit the ball, we were attacking, looking for the winner. We got the shot. I was hoping we'd get the shot off that maybe Dhoni or Senna might get it because they have a big boost. But it was very difficult. The breeze was driving in at that, so you would have had to have a serious bender to have a go at it and cut it into the breeze. Gall were pressurising us. So, always thought we had a chance of getting the winner.
Yeah. I suppose, when Varley got that point for them to go 2 points up, with the strong breeze, it didn't look great for you.
But we've never backed away from this year. Honest to God, we haven't. I know we don't look like anything like the finished article, but like, there's loads of heart in them. They will not back, they'll keep fighting this bunch. And they've learned now from a Connacht, we're a very young team, I think. Yeah. We've brought on a lot of young players and two of our stalwarts then, try and get the thing drawn up. So, they're going to learn a lot from this now. They're really going to have a Connacht final behind them, and I'll really look forward to the replay. So, very positive and interesting, I can assure you that.
Yeah, it looked like two teams that were a little bit afraid out there, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. And I mean, there would have been an element of that. Like, when we saw the conditions, everything tightened up.
A lot of nerves in the dressing
room. As it was. 22-year-olds.
Yeah.
Young. I think you're back to your own there when you're going into a big match.
I know.
Do you want the ball or don't you? You're in the way for it, or are you looking for it? And all that has to be dealt with. And they were a bit edgy, but just keep playing, and it'll work out. And thankfully it did. I thought Young Smith's free to come on as a sub. And we had Senna on, who's an experienced guy.
Yeah, I would have taken that.
I was upstairs saying, are we sure of this? And Fergal said, he has the ball in his hand, he has the balls for us.
He wanted it.
And he struck a brilliant. Seemed to go in the ear for an age, though.
Yeah.
But it was a great kick.
What about giving up the kickouts in the first half when you had the wind? Would it not have been better with that strong wind to have pushed up on them and maybe get one or two handy scores from turnovers?
Yeah, I would. We just wanted a bit of cover back. We've leaked a lot of big scores, over the season. And the one thing we didn't want was to be, marooned with goals early on and the game busted. So we wanted to keep it very tight and then try and pick the moment for when we might push up. And we pushed up at about 6 minutes to go, sent up our sweeper and trying to drive it on a bit. We learned from that now. We'll figure out that what suited us, for the whole 70, 72, 73, what suited us best, and try and get the balance. The balance in that, like, Comer's are hugely dangerous.
Yeah, he is. That wind was so strong, they wouldn't have been able to get you. You would have had lads back in time. Was there maybe a few nerves from the management team as well?
Yeah, indeed. When we were thinking about during the week, like, our big debate between ourselves is getting the balance between defending and attacking. But our number one was we didn't want to concede goals in the Connacht final. We wanted to keep a clean sheet.
Yeah.
Now we've done that. Now this week we'll develop from that and see can we take a few more risks or a few more chances next weekend.
Yeah. You replaced a lot of your forward line. You must have been happy with the way it was all clicking together. But against that wind, against that defensive system, it's not easy for them.
And the reason we replaced them, genuinely, not because anybody was playing really poorly. It was because they were out of energy. They were wrecked. They did a mountain of covering and chasing. And when you're doing 6 on 5 for kickouts, that's the full forward line isn't any crack. Looking over and back, trying to shimmy onto the spare man and cheese in the middle, and everyone's roaring at them. You pick up someone.
I know.
Spend the whole day running around in circles. But we got through that, and I think the next day you'll see possibly a more open game.
All right, that was the two respective managers of Roscommon and Galway there. But interesting to hear Kevin McStay admit that there was nerves within the management team, because everyone could see there was nerves out in the field. There's two new teams, almost like they were afraid to win. But for McStay to admit, they went with the full-time sweeper there all the time and said that maybe the management, because two new management teams as well with those respective counties, relatively new. Walsh was there last year. But to say that there was potentially nerves in the management team and that's why they set up conservatively, you don't hear many managers admitting that.
No, it was very honest from them, and it's not something you'd consider at all really going into a big game like that. You usually just focus your attention on the players and how they're going to cope with the occasion. As you mentioned there, Galway and Roscommon, they haven't too many provincial titles under their belt over the last 10 years. So,
and they're young teams too.
And the young teams as well, so it was a big stage for them. But certainly I think from management point of view, players point of view, they've so much to learn from the game on Sunday afternoon. Neither teams did themselves justice in any shape or form. I mean, for Roscommon, they'd be having a particularly good year. Now, playing to a high standard in the league, they got 8 Division 1 league games under their belt this year, so they're used to playing at that standard. This was their fourth championship game this summer, and you think that they would be learning and developing in every game, but certainly a lot of Roscommon supporters would be hugely disappointed at what they saw.
Yeah, I was writing on Sports Joe last week about conceding kickouts being a blight on the game, and you never see a good game when teams concede kickouts, because there's no man-on-man action. There's no kind of, you know, people use the word intensity, but like, how can you be intense when you're conceding something? It goes against everything intensity.
You're just retreating.
And Galway gave up the kickouts to the cornerback, left a full-time sweeper with the wind. Roscommon left a full-time sweeper with the wind. I can't get my head around this, because, like, I mean, we've all played against the strong wind. How bloody difficult is it to work the ball out against that wind? And for them to give up an extra player and allow them work it out easier than put six on six and say, here, we're in your face, you're not going to get an easy pass here to get out against that wind, that's criminal.
It absolutely is. I mean, when you're playing against the wind, all you really want to do is pop it off and run again.
Yeah.
And when you've got an extra man there, it's exactly what you're allowed to do. But I think from Galway's point of view, it was more criminal because they had the better midfield, so they should have been the ones coming up and making that sort of face-off happen in the middle. Whereas Roscommon were quite happy for that sort of scenario to unfold at either side.
Maybe, yeah, because they suppose they didn't want it to go to midfield. But like, it's much... The two cornerbacks were just left. McDermott got, I don't know, how many kickouts. And then they're working it from there. Whereas, like, drive it... Number one, drive it with the wind as far as you can. You're gaining the ball on the other 45 almost. So, you're conserving energy.
You're putting them on the back foot straight away.
Putting them on the back foot. Get a shot off. Then have them with the kick out. And drive your fist through it back down on top of your own full forward. You know what I mean? Keep them down there. But, you know, both teams allowed, them to work out against the wind too easily, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, the wind was a huge factor, but it looked like neither team actually had a conversation about the wind.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember a few years ago, we played Tyrone in the National League up in Omagh, in Healy Park, and there was a gale force wind down the pitch. And we arrived at the ground about 2 hours beforehand, which was normal enough, but we ended up having a conversation about the wind, and I think the manager nearly picked two separate teams, one for with the wind and one for against the wind.
Right.
Because if you have a target man and you want to play long direct ball in, and all of a sudden you lose the toss and you're against the wind for the first half, it's completely pointless having that guy in there. And instead you'd swap him in for maybe another half back and have him picking up a lot of ball, and then at half time you're actually going to switch back to your original team. And that's something that we did after we found out that we had lost the toss, that look, we got to swap the team, and the full forward was pulled. I said, look, you're coming on at half time.
It was a pillar,
and it was
that
actually
was the time of the big row, was it?
No, that was a different time. I think that was 2005, the row was 2006.
All right, okay.
But actually Robbie Boyle was the guy who was going to be the full forward, and actually I think Sennan wasn't due at the start that day, but then when we found out that that we were playing against the wind, he was the perfect guy to come in, and he got 25 possessions in the first half.
That's thinking. I love hearing stuff like that, because I don't see that enough. It's almost like there's blinkers on managers. This is the way we're playing. The wind is a huge factor, like you said. It's massive. And you see Enda Smith taken off in the second half when they're playing against the wind. He's made for playing against the wind, running the ball, taking a 1-2. And they give him a job in at full forward with the wind, didn't use him.
Yeah.
And suddenly he's withdrawn when he should be out around the midfield running at teams.
I've actually been a victim of that, what Barry's talking about, myself. I was a donkey player back in Derry, just running back, tackling men, just making myself a nuisance. But big wind one day. We were playing with it in the first half, so the manager switched the team around, put another fella in instead of me, didn't need me tracking back for the first half. This fella scored 5 points. I never got a kick of the ball that day, but that's exactly the way you need to be thinking about the elements and sort of adapting.
Yeah, and you'd be playing training matches throughout the whole year in these weather conditions as well, you know, A versus B training matches when it may be a gale force wind. So surely these conversations will be taking place from January all the way through to July, you know.
Yeah, I want to point out actually Conan is... club footballer up with Steelstown, wing back, wing forward. He's the people's champion here. 90% of the people listening to this are club footballers.
Yeah.
Conan's flying the flag for you guys.
representing
the club footballers all over the country. And it's actually weird. I'm not going to go off topic, but when you play intercounty, how little idea you have of the struggles. Mm. This is a whole other show, but it is only... Barry, you retired a couple of years ago and suddenly you realise, God, it's a bit of a dog's life back there.
Absolutely, and we could have about 10 shows about this, you know, but certainly when you're an intercounty player, you're completely consumed by it and you're in a bubble. You know, you really are for 9 months of the year, and what's going on with the club, you have no idea really, and you're totally disconnected from it, and, you know, there's a bigger issue at play there as well.
Yeah.
That, you know, you're not being seen around the club, you're not being integrated into the team, you're not really being part of the community as well, and obviously intercounty county players nowadays have so much control over it that it is a big problem.
And just back to the game, because you've played midfield, right? And you know, the message to any team I was on, you're playing with the wind, the other team is kicking it out, drive your fist through it, get it back down, put their full back line under pressure. And sometimes driving a fist through it is like a good ball into your full forward line.
Absolutely,
but
yeah.
These teams conceding these kickouts, I can't ram it home enough. It's taking all this pressure away.
Yeah.
And you look at likes of Mayo, we'll get on to talk about them in a little while. Their full court press, like people never saw them as a defensive team. They were one of the best defensive teams in the country because they defended right up there. And cornerbacks hate.
Yeah.
Okay, at club level, it's more obvious, but at inter-county level, cornerbacks are comfortable, but they're still not the most comfortable, and they'll panic.
Yeah.
And if you're pressuring them up there, like, you know, you're going to get turnovers and you're going to get easier scores.
Yeah, I mean, you see with Dublin, I mean, they're allowed give the kick out, you know, at their leisure to their full backline players. Usually Stephen going up with his left foot just clips it to the right hand side to Johnny Cooper, and he's acres of space. Now Johnny Cooper is well equipped to go up the pitch as a half back or midfield, you know, to play the ball, which is fine. But generally your cornerback is your least skilled player and least comfortable player on the ball. So putting him under pressure, you know, you could easily get, you know, a dodgy solo or something like that and get an interception. And then straight away you're in for a goal. But as you said, like if you're a big midfielder and the kick out is coming up to you, you have the wind, it's going to hang up there and it's a perfect opportunity to put your fist through it, drive it back about 20, 30 yards. And again, straight away you're engineering a score straight away. But you know, I think there's going to be a huge amount of video analysis for these guys over the next few days to try and rectify things for next weekend.
Yeah, and two examples of this pushing up. I think it was in the 56th minute, Bradshaw, the Galway wing back, he pushed right up on a Roscommon kick out, won it back, the ball broke the Comer and tapped it over the bar. Easy. Then Roscommon, only the last 5 minutes, Max Day admitted there, they only pushed up on the kickouts when they almost had to.
Like that'll tell you reluctantly.
How conservative they were. But they pushed up on the kickout and it resulted in a Roscommon kickout going out over the line or being lost. And they got their, I think, Carl Craig's point came from that.
To bring it back to one,
But like, I mean, you know, that's a bit of aggression. That's a bit going out to win the game. And I think when both Max Day and Walsh said they learned things from the game, I think the main thing to learn is go out and win the bloody thing. It's a Connacht final. You know, Mayo will be back next year. Just take your chance and don't be afraid of it.
Absolutely. And it wasn't a case that, you know, yesterday was going to be the end of the season, you know. So you have an opportunity to go and win the game. But there was such a sense of cautiousness and lack of conviction in the game. I mean, even if you look at the very last play, you know, it's the last attack of the game. Roscommon worked the ball up into the Galway 45. I counted there was 11 actually Roscommon guys in the Galway 45, but none of them was really looking for the ball, or they didn't really want to shoot. There was probably a fear factor there that they might, you know, cough up possession, get blocked down, maybe drop a shot short, and Galway cup to their end and win it. So they're playing for a replay then at that stage, and you know, it just left a lot of people, I think, deflated after the game.
Yeah
I thought it funny looking on, I thought it reminded me of 30 Mies running around the pitch where no one was trying to do anything. It was like they got the ball, they popped it off, man was standing still, popped it, another man standing still. All it would have taken was one team to maybe want to try and win it, like even for 5 minutes, just push up,
or even a couple of players, you know, just to take it and put it on themselves and say, look, I'm going to drive at them, couple of 1-2s, gain 30 or 40 yards, create an opportunity then to kick the score from 30 yards out, you know.
But it's funny you saying about the managers being nervous, Willie. I mean, that is obviously going to seep down into the team, where you could see it then, nobody wanted to make a mistake and they were all just balls of nerve.
Yeah, they were. And the Roscommon attack didn't function at all. They ended up taking off four of their attackers. To be fair, Galway's system, like it's very defensive, but they seem a little bit more comfortable with that system than Roscommon did. I don't think it's Roscommon's normal game. They were adapting for that day, but Galway are playing like that and they have a nice bit of pace on the break. Like Flynn is a flyer, you know, Silk gets down the field, then, you know, Shane Walsh, Bradshaw gets down, and then they've Comer, who absolutely love him. He's my favourite player now. He's a ball of destruction. Like if you get the ball in near him, you know, he's going to win those balls that are really difficult. I think Galway didn't use him enough.
Yeah, he's sort of a bit like Kevin McMenamin, you know. He's that type of guy that will win sort of, you know, any type of ball that comes into him. But certainly, like, on paper, Galway do have a good attack. The likes of Gary Sice, who was outstanding, you know, winning the All-Ireland Club a couple of years ago. Shane Walsh, I think, is one of the best young players in the country. He had a bad day yesterday, you know, even that shot at the end, you know, easily could have dummied and tapped it over or gave it back, but probably he should have just taken responsibility, dummied from the left and then kicked it over with the right foot. And he is a top class footballer. And then the two guys inside, Cummins, who probably got man of the match, and Comer as well, like they are very lively and they cause a lot of problems. And you know, Neil Collins, a club mate of mine, he joined St. Bridget's this year. He was a big loss, I think. You know, he's been playing full back for the entire year.
Yeah.
Doing a good job there. And the Roscommon you know, full back line was vulnerable, but, you know, Galway just didn't really capitalise that on that enough.
Probably not. To be very disappointed considering going 2 points up with that strong win. Yeah. That game should be over at that stage. You know what I mean? You give Roscommon a lot of credit. Mm. But the foul at the end for the equalising free, how lazy. That's just laziness. And that's, you have enough men back. Mm. Like, there's no excusing that. Like, that cannot be tolerated in a squad. That's exactly hands out.
Yeah.
If he's good enough to kick it over from play against the wind,
exactly.
probably not. Then you'll say, well done, Roscommon, you deserve your draw. But don't give it, you know, don't hand it to them.
I'm very much pro sort of getting contact tackles on at all times, but that was the time not to do it.
Yeah.
You know, there was no need to actually go in and try and strip the ball. It was a case of holding him up, keeping your arms out and making sure that, you know, he doesn't get the shot off, or if he does, obviously put as much pressure under him as possible. But yeah, certainly a 2-point lead, playing at home with that wind, with 3 minutes to go, like, that should be worth a 6 or 7 point lead. You know, the game should have been done and dusted at that stage. But, you know, probably should give Roscommon a bit of credit. You know, having played so bad, a lot of things didn't go well for them. A lot of players didn't play up to standard. They kept plugging away and sort of got a draw that you felt that it wasn't likely on the cards with a couple of minutes to go.
Yeah, you'd probably say Galway slightly shaded it on the day, but Roscommon just kind of pulled it back, and they did show character, to be fair.
Yeah, I mean, it's exciting for them nearly that it wasn't their full hand that they were showing there. Like, they were nowhere near what Roscommon can do. They've really reverted away from what they were doing well in the league, and what sort of made them so good. I mean, that's the sort of great thing for them going into next week. But it did annoy me a little bit after the game that it's not to get into it here, but they started this whole entertainment debate. Whereas, like, it was just two teams who were bricking it and didn't want to do anything. That's nothing to do with football. Like, that's, but it's, of course, a big national crisis with this declared again afterwards.
Yeah, the normal halftime RTE, was it a good game or not? That's usually what they discuss. Did you enjoy that, Joe? I didn't. Right, okay. I don't care if Joe enjoyed it or not.
Yeah.
But this is another thing, and you see Waterford, who we'll be talking about in the hurling show, is when you put so much focus on the league, and Roscommon hit that league hard. They're going since last October, November, and they played sensational stuff, you know, in the early rounds of the league when they were flying it.
Yeah.
It's very hard to keep that level of intensity and the same speeches. Mm. Like, you really need to have another level to go to from the championship.
Yeah.
And I think Roscommon struggled against New York for that reason.
Mm.
And I think they haven't regained their spark because of the, like, mentally, I'd say a lot of their players are
drained.
Just kind of tired and drained.
Yeah, it is a tricky one for them now because, you know, when they went back training in November, December time, they were probably fearful of losing their Division 1 first few games, you know, and that would have played on their mind. And obviously they would have tailored their training accordingly and try and, you know, be at a really high level for February. And, you know, it is a risk because possibly come July and August you're going to be drained and tired and maybe picked up injuries, etc. But to be honest, I think they had to go with that approach because if you look at Down, and they ended up losing their first two or three games handy enough. Like, Down and Roscommon were probably the favourites to get relegated from Division 1 at the start. And for Roscommon to survive in Division 1, they had to start well and maybe have an advantage over teams in terms of fitness. And we've obviously seen how much of an impact Down's league had then on their championship, where they, you know, they'd know they did nothing positive, you know, in Ulster or in the back door. So for Roscommon to have that approach, I think it was correct. You know, they ended up losing their last three league games, but in fairness, it was against Dublin, Kerry and Mayo, who were probably the three best teams in the country, you know, at the time. So I wouldn't be hugely overly worried about that. But certainly the 7 Division 1 league games, the semi-final against Kerry, that's 8, and now they've played 4 more. So you're going into a 13th game, and as you said, mentally, I think, you know, because you're getting yourself up for that, for every one of those Division 1 league games, because you can't afford not to. Whereas for Dublin and other teams, you can maybe go up and down at certain levels between February, March and April, and certainly Dublin don't have to get to a high level till August then as well, mentally, or they don't have to tune in 100%
to that.
But you know, it is difficult for them and it is a learning curve. I mean, you know, staying up in Division 1 was definitely the priority because they're going to get another good 7 league games under their belt next year, but yeah, the Connacht performances haven't been up to scratch, and I think there is more in that team. And I think that the beauty about a replay is that generally it's a better game than the first game because teams just decide to, you know, throw off the shackles that bit more and say, come on, there's something at stake here, and let's actually go for it this time. So hopefully it'll be a better game next weekend.
Yeah, maybe they could get Mickey Hart in to give them a talk. He knows a thing or two about replay.
Specialist, yeah.
Quickly, lads, who are we going for in the replay? I'm going to go for Galway.
I'm going to go with Galway as well. I just think up front, they just have that bit more quality, and I'm expecting more from Sice and Walsh as well. And I think just overall, they would have edged it on Sunday, and I think I think they'll get through the weekend.
Cannon?
I'm going to go Roscommon.
Not like you to be different.
No reason for it, just to be different.
Okay, great stuff, lads. By the way, everybody listening, I hope you know the GAR has a hurling show as well.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I should go. And so
we were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because like I'm heartbroken.
All right, Conan, you were our man up in McHale Park at the weekend. Of course, we talked about the diving incident, so we won't get back into that. But Mayo, impressive, or what did you think?
Well, I think it should be said that this is the qualifiers now, so this is what you get. Like, it's going to be tough. You're going to get ambushes all over the place. Like, this is, Fermanagh were out if they didn't win, which is exactly what happened. So they're not going to get an easy game here anymore, especially not against Kildare either. We did mention that they were going to win, regardless of the penalty. They were. That was 29 minutes of constant pressure. They pushed men up in the kickouts, like we said earlier.
Okay.
And Barry Moran and Seamus O'Shea started cleaning Fermanagh out. I mean, I think Fermanagh scored 2 points in the whole second half. One of them was after the penalty. But it was just non-stop for me. It was played in that half. It was just a constant stream of men coming forward. But they didn't seem to have a lot of shape. And I know you were saying about this full court press and that, but in the first half in particular, it really sort of worked against them. Like, they had Kevin McLaughlin back there, and there seemed to be this attitude, well, I hope Kevin starts that out. You know?
Yeah.
Whereas there was just streams of Fermanagh men just running forward to the 21. Aiden Breen was wearing number 7. He scored 3 points from play in 35 minutes. And it was just constant sort of like men being deployed from Fermanagh, just going up the pitch on challenge.
Yeah, well, that's actually the difficulty that I have with sweepers, because, you know, if you're struggling defensively and conceding scores or conceding goals, I think, you know, the lazy option or the first option seems to be, let's put in a sweeper, you know, and that shouldn't be your only option, really, if you're trying to tighten up defensively. And the thing about having a sweeper there is, if you get a player back and he's playing probably between the full back line and a half back line player, a half back line, like, opposition teams will identify that and they're going to bypass you, you know. So that sweeper there can actually be in no man's land, and he mightn't actually be doing anything. You know, there could be good quality good ball going into the guys inside, and the sweeper doesn't have enough time to get back and double team them, etc. And also, you're freeing up an opposition player out the pitch. Now, Aidan Breen came forward and kicked 3 points and probably was man of the match in the day. Mayo shouldn't have allowed him to be the spare man. I mean, that's a bit of a no-brainer. If you're down to 14 men, or if you're playing a sweeper, the last thing you want is for the free player to be a guy who's going to dictate play. The free player, again, has to be the corner black, really.
You bring out a corner forward on him, and you leave the shitty corner back, like Barry says.
You occupy the sweeper, because, you know, him sitting back there, he wants the freedom of the world. He doesn't want to have to be man-marking anyone. He just wants to do what he wants, basically, you know, an intercept ball, start attacks, that type of stuff. So if you bring out a fella from the full forward line and put him on him, it distracts him, really, you know, and causes confusion between the two players, the two defenders. I said, who are we picking? Who's picking him up? And, you know, the actual full forward line player can actually get on a bit of ball, because it does cause a bit of confusion. So certainly Killian O'Connor or Aidan O'Shea or someone else should have came out and played more in a sort of diamond formation. And he should have been tagged. You know, the players in the half forward line with Mayo and the midfielders, that guy should have been identified and said, look, yeah, there might be a mismatch here of a 4v5 or 3v4, but he certainly shouldn't have been the guy that was free to get forward and kick those scores.
Yeah, and it definitely, 100%, that's criminal to leave an attacking halfback as the spare man. But the whole system in general with Mayo, and this is a problem I have, it's like Mayo were so close under James Horan. They were even so close under Holmes and Connolly last year, Kennelly last year, that, you know, they're beaten by the All-Ireland champions, last two All-Ireland champions, after extra time. Mayo don't need any huge change. Mayo are so close. They're literally, when Kieran Donnelly came on in Croke Park that day, bring on Barry Moran and tell him to mark Kieran Donnelly. That's the mistake that was made that day. It's nothing wrong with the Mayo system. The Mayo system is putting it up to any team in the country and beating them. A little in-game management is all they needed. And Rochford, if he has that, Tony McEntee would have that. That's enough. Yeah. Leave what they have and what's working for them. They're brilliant halfback. They're big men. They're athletic. They can put it up to Dublin. They're pressing high up the field. They're all responsible for a man. Now they're not all responsible for a man because if some lad coming out of the fence and it's been thrown over their head and their full court press doesn't work, they're running around, you know, trying to run after one lad, run after another lad. And then, like I said, the sweeper, McLaughlin, isn't necessarily the greatest sweeper in the world. So, like, Mayo look confused. And like you said, they're giving up them a sweeper. So now the other team could have two sweepers. Like, why are they changing something that was so close to working and going back to the, it's almost like they're going back to the drawing board again.
I suppose... because it didn't work, and,
well,
you know.
Yeah, but so like, they're like, very fine margins. Like,
I know. So maybe like I have a bit of. I agree. Like, you know, they're the only people it wasn't working against was Kerry and Dublin, but it was 5 years at the top there, and they needed something else, a fine margin to get over the line. So you can sort of understand them trying something else. Like,
yeah,
you know,
no, I can too. I can too. But the performances aren't what they were. I think if they're practicing the sweeper. During the league, which I saw them and they were playing defensive during the league, I'm thinking, right, they're trying this out, so if they're 4 points up against Dublin like they were last year, that they can revert to this.
Exactly.
But it's not. It's like they're keeping this as their system, which is disappointing.
A permanent sweeper that Mayo have at the moment, I don't think suits this team. And I don't think it suits Kevin McLaughlin either. And it's doing a bit of a disservice to him because he has been an effective player for them over the last few years in the half-forward line, particularly delivering good ball into the guys inside and chipping away with a couple of points as well. So I think he's finding it a bit difficult. But certainly, you know, any team going into the championship, you need minimum two tried and trusted systems or patterns of play that you can fall back on and you can use at any situation, depending on the elements or the opposition or the actual, you know, game management, game intelligence. You know, if you're a lead in a match, this is what you can actually introduce to it. I don't think Mayo have that at the moment. I think they're caught between a number of different systems, certainly the permanent system sweeper one isn't working. And, you know, having a sweeper back there, you know, there's other ways around it and being a bit more defensive. You know, I think a sweeper pushing up and actually putting pressure on the guys coming out the pitch and going man on man, full court press, putting pressure on the guys running out the pitch and particularly putting pressure on the kicks coming in, you're actually doing more of a service to your team then and helping your full back line players then, trying to get blocks in or trying to put them down alleyways or put them towards the sideline rather than allowing them that free kick whereby, you know, any inter-county player now can hit a 50-yard pass uncontested to a guy on his chest.
Or even letting, like, I mean, if you're bringing back a forward, he's a long way to go to get back in that position. Like, bring out the midfielder. You do it for St. Bridges. Colin Cavanagh is famous for it now.
Yeah.
A midfielder is much closer to that action. Let him drop, and you're not messing up your whole shape then.
Or you're wasting energy as well. Yeah. You know, expecting guys to make a 60-yard run up the pitch and then make a burst 60 yards back and then actually have to do something then. You know, conserving energy is an obvious thing.
You know all about that, Colin.
The sweeper is a lovely position, though. I'll never begrudge it. Well, one of the things that did stand out a lot, actually, was Aidan O'Shea, though. Not because of his dive or whatever. His role was very unclear. Like, it was such a selfish role from him, which we're not used to seeing him doing. Like, you know, he was working around midfield, he was getting back, he was tracking men, making tackles.
He does a lot of work.
It was very selfish. And but you have to wonder, was it right? Like, you know, are you getting the most out of Aidan O'Shea doing that stuff? He went down to the full forward line then in the last 10 minutes when they started needing to score and they were still chasing the game. But I just, if they're going to beat Kildare, if they're going to go further into the quarter final, maybe, like, they'll need the most out of Aidan O'Shea. You need your game winners, and it didn't look like they had any sort of system designed around their best player.
Yeah, I saw him a few years ago up at a Connacht final against Galway, and he played centre half forward, and Mayo played orthodox, pressing high up the field, you know, the James Horan model. But he pulled it over to either wing for the kick-out. So he was an option for the kick-out. I think it was O'Donnell that was marking him that day. And O'Donnell didn't know to go wide with him for the kick-out and leave the whole centre open.
Yeah.
Mayo win the kick-out, go down long down the middle, they're straight down.
Yeah.
Or he didn't know whether to hold his centre half back and give Aidan O'Shea the free kick-out. And I thought that was a great way of using Aidan. You know what I mean? Because you had him out around the middle, but you also had a centre half back who wants to hold.
Yeah.
But centre-backs kind of... You know, if it's Aidan O'Shea, you nearly have to follow him.
Yeah, that's a tricky one. And I played, you know, centre back in my time as well. And when you're coming up against a player who has such an influence on them, do you stick or twist scenario? You know, and you know, you can end up being caught between two stools on it as well. But I think with Mayo over the last few years, I think there's no doubt they've definitely been, you know, one of the top three teams in the country, possibly the second best team in the country for a few years. new management coming in. I mean, if there's 50 things you need to do to win an All-Ireland, Mayo have probably ticked off 40 to 45 of them,
yeah.
you know, over the last few years. So certainly, you know, a few changes here and there you would have felt would have got them closer, particularly with a new management team. But on the other hand, you know, if you look at it from my time with Dublin and Pat Gilroy, I think him coming in 2009 had that mentality. You know, under Pillar Caffrey, we'd won four Leinsters in a row. We'd pushed Kerry very close in 2007, possibly the, you know, second best team in the country. He probably thought, I can add this extra 10% by just tweaking things here and there. But then subsequently, yeah. after getting hammered by Kerry, you know, and then conceding five goals to me, he realised, I got to tear off the script here and start from scratch. And he ended up putting a couple of half backs as half forwards.
God, Conan, those, and were all the that, day, you know? Those were the days, weren't they, when Dublin were conceding five goals?
Yeah, try and block out that memory. But, you know, he was faced with a situation. It was, okay, you know, I'm not going to win on Ireland with this current team, so I got to change it up. But, you know, Tony McInney came in there this year. He was my club manager with Bridget over the last 2 years.
Is he good?
Really sharp guy, really clever guy. Obviously, great pedigree coming from that Joe Kernan set up with Armagh. But also, he had managed Cross McGlen for 3 years, winning two All-Ireland titles. And, you know, he's such a sharp brain. Like, he would have been adding something to it this year. But the results or the performances hasn't reflected that today. You know, they started through the league, were quite average, went over to London, which was, you know, a useless game for them really, but they had a training camp there for a week, you know, yeah. and any of these training camps, you know, you're able to squash 3 or 4 weeks of, you know, quality training, video analysis, you know, tactical stuff into that sort of 5 or 6 day period, and you would have felt that would have really benefit them going forward into the summer. But I suppose the one positive from the weekend was, first of all, they won the game, but, you know, they did win the game quite comfortably in the second half, in that I think they outscored, you know, Fermanagh by 10 or 11 points in the second half.
Yeah.
So and Fermanagh are a decent team. I think the draw has been kind for them as well. They'll get over Kildare, so now they can start building a bit of momentum. But, you know, I look at Mayo at the moment, and I sort of look through the lens of, how are they better now, you know, to compete with the likes of Dublin to win All-Ireland? Because an All-Ireland semi-final or a Connacht title, or even losing an All-Ireland final, is no use to them at all.
No.
You know, it's all about getting that All-Ireland medal for them. And certainly, you know, I haven't seen enough really to convince me that they will get over the line thus far.
Yeah, me neither. And I suppose when they start playing against the likes of Dublin, they want to drop back McLaughlin. They're giving Dublin that Keane O'Sullivan yeah. sweeper straight away, which is not the right thing to do against Dublin. You
yeah.
know, you want
yeah.
to try and take the game to them. So, I don't know. I think Mayo have a lot of work to do. There's absolutely no doubt about that.
Do you want to take the game to Dublin? We're giving a Dublin debate here.
I think you have to.
I mean, you take the game to Dublin, you're on a foot race then with some of the best athletes.
Not for 75 minutes, but I think you do have to. Otherwise, you know, you're going in with that negative, you know, and you're trying to contain them too much. And we'll probably chat about it again about Dublin, but you have to put Keane O'Sullivan under pressure.
Yeah,
you know,
you have to make him mark someone.
Keane is just having such a good time there, you know, and he's a brilliant footballer, and he's such a clever player, you know, that he doesn't get caught out of position and stuff like that. But, you know, some days I watch Dublin play, and Keane is just in first or second gear. You know, he's in cruise control because no one is taking him on and making life difficult for him and asking questions of him. You know,
yeah, great stuff, lads. Barry is going to leave us in the studio now. We're going to have Mickey Quinn joining us very soon, and up next is our performance of the week. All right, Conan, hit me with the nominations for performance of the week.
Ross Munnelly, Colin Bigley, Tony Kingston, any of the Leash lads, really. Take
yeah.
your pick, Colin.
Leave it off.
No, obviously there's 15 Derrymen we have to sort of run over very quickly.
Yeah, we actually debated how many. We all tried to fight our corner for Derry and Leash players. Well, like, I was fighting a losing battle, but you could have, you did get Mark Lynch in there.
I did. And unfortunately, I was fighting my corner last week trying to get to the Derry game, the Derry Meath match. But geez, like, what a result! It seemed like Derry was down in the doldrums. I remember reading that death notice in Irish Independent for Derry football. But geez, they really turned it around. They were 180 not four down, and Mark Lynch just done what Mark Lynch has been doing for the last decade.
Yeah, when he's on song, when he's on song, he's really hard to handle, isn't he? He's a powerhouse.
He is, and I think, in fairness to him, like, you know, people probably argued that this guy was supposed to be the best player in Ireland. Like, when he was coming through school, everyone knew who he was, but he's been playing on a team that's not really been firing on all cylinders for. When was 1993?
Since they were good in the league there in the early 90s.
For 23 years. But, like, he's a marked man. You know, it's hard when you go out and everyone knows who Mark Lynch is, and they don't know necessarily who the rest of the Derry team might be. But he's, when he gets into that sort of free role out around the middle of the pitch, he's hard to handle. He can run with the ball, he can pass it, he's both feet. I mean, on his day, yeah, he is a flyer, and he's definitely one of my nominations for Performance of the Week.
Who else have we got?
Well, Podge Collins, we had a talk about it, just for keeping the dual player dream alive. I mean, he came on for Clare Footballers and played for the Clare Hurlers in one weekend, won both games.
And outstanding for the Hurlers, and kind of turned the game, you know, when he did against Limerick in the first round of the Munster Championship as well, completely changed the game when he came on. Very likeable player, small but outstanding. I think he's well deserving. And the more promotion we can give the dual players, the better. That's what I say.
But there was a game in Monaghan, in Clunas, which many Derry people will tell you that it wasn't that big of a surprise. Longford went and ambushed them. And as they won and that result came through, you could see Derry people all around the country nodding their heads thinking, yeah, Longford are a good team. We told you that, because they've obviously been put out by Longford three times in the last, 6 or 7 years? So I'd say any one of those lads, take your pick.
Yeah, well, you know, the winner is, and this is not going to come as a surprise, because you know Mickey Quinn's coming up on the show now in a couple of minutes. So obviously the performance of the weekend comes from Longford, who, to be fair, had an outstanding win. Longford want to transfer up to the Ulster Championship, I think they do at the moment. They're an outstanding qualifier team, and we're delighted to say that Mickey Quinn, their captain, is on the line. Mickey, I want to read a quote out to you first. It's from a farmer. It's from Eugene McGee's piece in the Independent today. It's from a farmer, a poor old farmer in Longford, and what you put him through. He said, "I had to leave the kitchen and go upstairs so I wouldn't have to hear the radio commentary. The tension was too much for me in the last 20 minutes, and I had to come down after it was over and ask the wife who had won. I haven't had this sort of excitement about Longford football in years." This is what you're doing to the people of Longford, Mickey.
Yeah, and probably a lot of silage has been done over the weekend too, so there's a bit of everything going on at the weekend. But it's a great feeling after the weekend, and you know, to get two back-to-back wins in a championship for a county like Longford, it's rare, and you know, we'd be hoping to try and keep backing that up again.
Yeah, and how have you turned it around, Mickey? Because, you know, it was obviously a terrible result against Offaly, a team you beat last year. And, you know, after a demoralising loss like that against a team that you probably expected to beat, you know, confidence must have been pretty low.
Yeah, things, you know, you start questioning everything, you know, management, you know, our strong players, everyone's kind of, you know, who's at fault, what's going on. But, like, we probably, looking back and now, we weren't half prepared for that first round of the championship with the way things. Yeah, like, just
why?
Looking at it, we're kind of, players weren't, you know, didn't know their roles enough. We hadn't played enough games from the league to the first round of the championship. We went back and played 3 or 4 rounds of club games. We had a great training camp in Portugal and done a load of work, and then we came back from that. Came back on a, I don't know, it was a Sunday night, late Sunday night, and on a Tuesday, we had a club game on the Tuesday, we had another club game on Friday, and then the following Wednesday, we had another club game. I think 2 weeks went by after that training camp, where we were just solely back with the club. And that kind of went to waste, instead of trying to build on that.
It doesn't sound like good preparation here at all.
No, that was just for the first round of the championship game. Like, and it had been touched on by management before at the time. And you know, you try and not read into it too much and just get on and do with what you're doing. But like, we're after playing five, you know, inter-county games and challenges since after the game, and we're after playing 2 championship games. So there's 7 games. We've got games under our belt. Found out, you know, what setups are working for us, players in the best position mainly, and what players to play, like, and you know, and guys getting run of form as well. And whereas with that, you know, we had probably 2 weeks, 2 good solid weeks before the after game, but you know, we couldn't get those games under our belt that we would have liked to.
Yeah, it's like a lot of people talk about club championship and how it should be played, you know, alongside the inter-county season, but just from hearing all that, you know, it kind of hampered your preparation in that, you know, you didn't get to build on your trip to Portugal and you're being pulled around in different directions.
Well, this is it. Like, and you know, I'm not saying it's very difficult for club players to be sitting and waiting and idle, and that's you know, there's a lot more players in that position than there is in, you know, playing for inter-county teams, you know, coming back. But like, you know, championship was fixed for this weekend in Longford to go straight back in with your club now and play championship this weekend in your club championship. And, you know, you're expected to slot straight back in with a team as well, like, you know, and two rounds of championship week after week. That's after coming off the back of probably, we're probably after going possibly 8-9 weeks of county games, and then three rounds of club games thrown in there too, and then the Offaly game as well. You know, like, it's difficult. It's very hard to find a solution for that side of things, but, you know, it just shows you what goes on behind scenes in each county. That it's crazy, really. It's very hard to describe.
Yeah, and I don't think that gets enough airtime, really, the fact that counties that are trying to do both at the same time, and you've got yourself here able to tell us how difficult that is to be able to do both.
Yeah, like, you know, it's, I can see it from both sides. You know, county boards want to look after club players, that they're not sitting back waiting, and, you know, but at the end of the day, we're probably after playing, we played a league final on the 28th or 21st of December this last year. You know, it still goes on until that time of year. So, you know, as much as there's a mad rush to get these things run off, like, it still drags on, and it's a fixture headache. Like, I wouldn't like to be trying to organise it or trying to keep people happy, but there definitely has to be a better way of trying to build on that, and at the same time, you know, support the county team, that, you know, that they can get the best out of what they can, instead of, you know, the sooner that finishes, the better.
Yeah, it's not an easy one. I don't think we're going to figure it out on this phone call. Talk to us about the game. Talk to us about the game, Mickey. Like, I mean, you started off great, but then Monaghan kind of hit 1-5 without reply, and usually you probably think that's the end of Longford, but that wasn't the case.
Yeah, like, I suppose, you know, you want a good start. You want to start the game well and build on that. And we got that. Like, there's games we've played where we've got those chances early in the game and haven't taken them. And I think we had chances like that against Offaly, but didn't take them. So when you get a 4-point lead up against Monaghan, you know, that's where you want to be. Like, the last thing you want to be doing is chasing a game against a defensive team or a so-called an Ulster team that, you know, have that defensive setup, that, you know, if you start chasing a game, you start leaving holes in the back. But no, they got a purple patch just before half time, which, you know, they clawed their way back in and went 3 points ahead, when we probably felt that we should have been going in 3 points up at half time with a bit of a wind in the second half, and started the second half well, and, you know, we didn't look back from there. They had opportunities and missed them, but, you know, the tables turn very quickly when you don't take those opportunities. You build on, the other team builds on them, and that's probably happened to us in other games where we've been on the receiving end of that.
Yeah, I'd say they were shell-shocked when, you know, the game started and saw, you know, what you were bringing to it.
I think so. I think, you know, if we can bring that on a more consistent basis, we can be a match for any team. But it's to get that, and for guys to realise you kind of have to work that hard every day and do it consistently when you play, and not kind of stray away from it. And I think we're getting there.
Yeah, is that belief an issue in Longford? You know, you go out, get a good result, and you sit back thinking that's my job done for the year.
Yeah, more so, you know, and, you know, when you play those games, the belief can swing very quickly. With a team like, you know, a so-called weaker team like ourselves, you know, if you're, you know, you start a game well and you're up 2 or 3 points, you know, that belief just comes just like that, and geez, we're a chance here, now we can drive on. Whereas, you know, the likes of those top teams, they've been in those positions, they can switch around, they still have that. Whereas if we went 4 points down at that start of that game, it might be a bit more difficult to turn around. But we knew if we were in the hunt for as long as possible, that if that's where we come to our own, and we did.
Yeah, as a matter of interest, did you change anything tactically after the Offaly game? Have you changed the game plan? Has Dennis Connerton, you know how you know he's a very good record with Longford 12 years ago. Has he did he change your season around or change the tactics anyway?
Slightly, but more so probably what I mentioned before, that the personnel and understanding, you know, where we're at, more so. You know, it's funny too, you spend so long doing things and, you know, you have to put these things into practice in training games, like, and that seems to be what suits us, is playing games and getting games, and then you can fine-tune them from there, whereas the likes of, you know, your top teams, your Dublin, your Kerry, that can have a 15-a-side game in training and it'll be as good as any challenge match. You know, we probably don't have the numbers to do that, first of all, and it won't be as competitive as you'd hope it to be. So, you know, getting those games under our belt has brought us on hugely.
Yeah, what about you on a personal level? Happy that you're home from Oz and happy you're beating the Monaghans and the Downs? I suppose it makes the decision a lot easier.
Oh, definitely. Like, you know, that's what you want. When you're winning, you know, everyone's rosy and, you know, you're happy to be doing that. And obviously, early on in the year, you know, it's difficult. You question, you know, whether it's worth all this effort putting in, you know, all your time and commitment, and, you know, what do you have to show for it at the end of the day? Like, and that's the hard thing. Like, the reward you get out of it, you know, it comes and goes very quickly. Like, that one Monaghan and Down, those games this year have been huge. Like, to, you know, to keep you plugging away, and those are the days that you hope for, and, you know, hopefully those days will kind of inspire other younger players to want to play for your county and to keep driving things on, because if you can get everyone out and get that belief and consistency there, that, you know, you can be a match for teams instead of looking, oh, should Dublin and Kerry are miles ahead of everyone else, and, you know, you're never a chance. Like, you very easily fall into that, you know, smaller county trap and accepting it, and, you know, coming away with your excuse and your moral victory losing games. So, you know, we're trying to change that. But, you know, when you're there with a moral victory, why not get the proper win and get the result?
Yeah, exactly. Just to finish up here, you're hardly claiming that goal, are you?
Definitely, you should have passed it off when I was coming through, anyway.
that was definitely going in. I'm trying to think of a striker. I can't come to my head that just finishes off goals that are going into the goals anyway.
Added by your, maybe, I don't know.
Could have been. Listen,
I think, yeah, Peter Hart probably got it.
Peter Hart, yeah, he's
what,
another one, didn't
one of, one of them. So, look, I was after busting the gut the whole way up. Like, I needed to take the hinges off, whether it was running in or doing something. So I was making sure to get something on the end of it.
Yeah, when you half backs get up around that goal, you're claiming that goal. That's the way it works.
Oh, we're taking anything, and we're getting the corner forward to drop back for us too.
Thanks, for Mickey Quinn. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks very much, Willie.
Yeah, Mickey Quinn there. Great stuff out of him, and some honest stuff about the preparation coming up to that Offaly game.
Some brilliant stuff there.
Yeah.
It's interesting that they had the training camp and then lost and then went back to the clubs and then started winning.
Yeah,
after that
but
thing.
They had the training camp, and instead of working on the stuff coming back from the training camp, they went to their clubs for 2 weeks.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You know, which they lost all the momentum out of the training camp, and it's almost like, let's do a training camp just to say we did a training camp without necessarily getting anything out of it.
It's like an end of league holiday, or I don't know. But
yeah, that's actually a good idea.
But it was good. It was good to hear a player actually just telling you what you think as well, like, rather than it is what it is. And
yeah. All right, that's all we have time for this week. So, Conan, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thanks to everybody else for putting the show together as well, Mikey Stafford and Evan Fanning. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at sportsjoe.ie_GAA and subscribe to us on iTunes. And we'll see you next week. Good luck.
Yet it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.